welcome to another episode of Girls with Dogs. This is Kimberly from Keep the Tail Wagging, and I'm here with my dear, dear friend, Kathy, the blogger behind Groovy Golden Doodles, and we are Girls with Dogs. And I'm super excited today because we have someone on with us, Julianne Lee of Adored Beast Apothecary. And I'm so excited about this because if you follow me and Keep the Tail Wagging, you know that I am very big on the importance of gut health. And that has trumped everything else for my dogs. And it's partly because of everything that I have learned from Julianne over the years. And we're going to get started, but I just want to say one thing. I was so tickled at an event in Southern California that you weren't able to go to. You weren't able to leave, but you were able to come and speak to us virtually. But so many of the questions and so many of the topics that were brought up that day all led to gut health, which it was just like, it's such an important thing, but it's something that when it comes to our dogs, if you're outside of the raw food community, you're really not thinking of gut health. So that being said, welcome to our podcast, Julianne. And let's just start with where you, what's your origin story?
Well, my origin story is all about my mom. And my mom was in dog rescue for almost 70 years, and she died when she was 93, and on her 92nd birthday, she was still doing it. So I come by it really naturally, and she was also very holistically oriented, right? So I followed in her footsteps for a very long time, and then when I got into conventional veterinary medicine, I kind of jumped ship and, thought that everything that her and my grandma were doing for many, many years, which is like they never got dog food, they weren't vaccinated, they were eating raw bones and, you know, eating groundhogs and the whole nine yards. And all of a sudden I was horrified by that from what I was being taught, and kind of tried to change everybody to do everything. And the animals just started getting sick, which was my very first sort of glimpse at what an animal looks like when they're thriving, mm-hmm. and what an animal looks like when they're surviving. Because we had cats, I'm not joking, we had cats living until they were 25, 26 years old and still hunting and being horribly run over by a tractor or something, you know, because they're half blind and deaf and still out in the fields. Mm-hmm. And we had large, like the dogs that I grew up with on our farm were predominantly collie German Shepherd crosses. So big dogs, you know, really big dogs. And it was our average life expectancy of all of my childhood dogs were easily 15 to 17 years old. So when I got into conventional veterinary medicine world, I was really noticing that just wasn't happening. You know, like it was very unusual to see that. And then my own personal dog at four developed cancer, and I was horrified and went to my mom and said, I don't know what to do. And she said, yes, you do. Call Virginia. And Virginia was our herbalist and our naturopathic doctor for our family. And she just sort of set me straight again. It's like, what are you doing? Get them off this food. Why are you vaccinating them so much? Like, so I have a lot of empathy, I have to say, for that other side and how easy it is to get your blinkers on and only see what you're learning in school and what your colleagues are doing. And, you know, you don't go to school and study that hard and try that hard to go against the grain. Right. So anyways, and that just led me into my path of holistic medicine for animals. And, Broody did wind up going and having the surgery done, but because we had been treating him for about a month prior to the surgery, instead of having to have a large part of his intestines removed, he didn't have to have any of it removed. And the doctor at that point said to me, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. So that just set me right on that path. And I moved to Vancouver and took a 4-year human homeopathic medicine program because I didn't think I wanted to do animals anymore. I was so discouraged. And then I went to England and studied for 4 years with the British homeopathic veterinary surgeons there and opened a holistic vet hospital in Vancouver. And that's where I started. And I had my practice for 22 years and then taught a 4-year postgraduate holistic veterinary program for veterinarians. And then I moved over to Nova Scotia and started the next phase of my life, which was a Adore Bees apothecary. But if we're talking about gut health, I want to try and break it down to something very simplistic, because when I first started practicing, I didn't know about gut health either. We're talking 27 years ago, right? 28 years ago. And I'm a homeopath, and I did a lot of herbs and nutraceuticals and diets. My hospital was the first veterinary hospital to carry raw food and support raw food and recommend raw food in 1996. And what started happening to me was that when you would do that shift, so I got dogs, cats, things coming in mostly end stage. We're talking serious end stage, because people thought I flew in on a broom, and they came to me because they had no other choice, right? Their dog was going to die, or they couldn't afford like another $12,000 at the vets for skin disease or whatever. So I wasn't that proficient at prescribing at that point. So the first thing I did is change their food. And then when I changed their food, I would start to figure out what homeopathic remedies I wanted to give them. But it took me a while because I wasn't that fast at it yet. And most of the time, they would get some GI stuff, right? They would get like a GI upset. And then I would work on their gut, right? So I would just automatically go, okay, well, let's give them some probiotics. Let's do some of this. Let's do some of that. And what I started noticing is that when I worked on their gut, in correlation with a healthy diet, homeopathic remedies, whatever, they exponentially improved. Or cancer dogs that would get like a bout of diarrhea, and we'd be like, okay, let's get whatever in. Their ability to maintain homeostasis lasted longer. And I saw that very early on in my practice. So then I started researching it. And I just really got into, what does gut health do? Why was that doing that? Mm-hmm. That's how I started with the whole thing.
I love it, and everything that you had to say. It's funny because I posted something on social media several months ago that, you know, my focus has been, you know, for the past few years, trying just better understanding the macro and micronutrients in my dog's diet. And although I understand how important that is, as I am doing a DIY raw diet, I felt that after losing two dogs to cancer, my main focus needed to be on making sure my dogs have a healthy gut microbiome. And I came to that conclusion because this was after attending that event in October, but also, you know, Sydney, she was sent home to us basically to die. After she was diagnosed with hemangiosarcoma, but she was with us for 5 weeks. And half of that time, she was up and active. And, you know, she was still sick, but she was not, she looked like a dog with arthritis, not a dog with cancer. And Scout, he was with us for over a year and a half after he was diagnosed with lymphoma. What we were told, 3 months, most likely a year if we were lucky. And in the beginning, the veterinarian, I gave her a list of everything that I did, and she marked off most of the good stuff. And, you know, she respected that, you know, I wanted to feed raw, but she was like, just go ahead and cook it. And she didn't really, wasn't comfortable with the gut supplement, the digestive supplements, because I can't remember why, but I just was like, okay, and ignored what she said, unless I could. And there were a few things that I agreed with, but for the most part, I was going to stay the course. And we got over a year and a half with him. And so that's what helped me believe that gut health is so very important, and it's going to, you know, help everything else. And by the time, like probably a couple of months before we lost Scout, even sooner than that, our oncologist was fine with, she was, you know, whatever I'm doing, just do it. Because out of all the dogs she was treating, he was the only one that not only was still here with us, but he was thriving. And he was, I mean, no one would know. I mean, whenever I take him to the clinic, everyone at the clinic would say the same thing. No one would know that he had cancer. He's doing so well. And he was that way all the way up until the day we lost him, or the day before we lost him.
So that's a really important, I think, segue into the understanding of gut health, because people think of it as bacteria, probiotics, and whatever, but I'm a bit of a nerd, as you know, when it comes to not just gut health, but bacteria in general, right? And the more I'm immersed in it, when it comes to all the companies that I'm working with and all the research I'm doing with Dalhousie and different researches sort of all over the world, I think the important thing to understand for people is that your gut, we always hear about immune system, right? The gut is like 60 to 70 to 80 to 90% of the immune system, depending on who's writing the article and what scientists are saying what. But that's a small part of it. That's a very small part of it. Your gut, basically, it's not even your gut, it's the bacteria in your gut, literally is like the conductor of the symphony of everything that happens in your body. So the gut brain access, it literally lets your brain know when to produce serotonin, when oxytocin, which is the pituitary loop as well, but it regulates hormones, it creates short chain fatty acids, it absorbs your nutrients, it is responsible for basically telling your entire body what to do. And it's a big stretch for people that don't really understand it, because it truly is communicating. It communicates to the rest of your body. So when the old fashioned term, my gut instincts are telling me, or my gut is telling me, that's not far off, right? That is very, very true. And we're seeing so much in science where people, animals, doesn't matter, with unhealthy gut microbiota, that they have, memory like fog and Alzheimer's and anxiety, and the list goes on and on. But that's a small part. And the more I am delving into gut health, the more I am like, I'm really happy. So like in 2004, I think it was, I used to write articles for the Vancouver Sun, and I had a weekly column in the Vancouver Sun called The Adored Beast. And I wrote an article about probiotics and what I see when I put animals on probiotics and how important I think that they are and whatever. And I literally got fined by the Vet Association, and I had to retract my statement saying that, because there was no scientific proof that probiotics or gut health had anything to do with anything in veterinary medicine. So though we've come a massively long way, my concern with this is that it is now in everything. It's in gum, it's in shampoo, and I embrace that, because that's how we have to get it out to the public, right? But we're missing a big piece, and that is compartmentalizing anything, right? So gut health is exponentially important, but I think it's equally important to understand what it is. Like, it's not just focusing on gut, it's focusing on what the gut needs in order to represent total health of the body. And for me, that moves into everything, meaning that we, when it comes to bacteria, we have been doing really bad. I hate pigeonholing things and saying they're bad, but we've missed the mark when it comes to bacteria. Because what we want to do, and what we're doing now even still, is we're either trying to eradicate it, by saying, should never have E. coli in your gut. You should never have Clostridium in your gut. You should never have Salmonella. You should never have yeast. You should, instead of going, what are the magnificent things that we put into the gut that keep all of those bacteria, pathogenic and non, in harmony? Because when you have pathogenic bacteria in very small amounts, it keeps your immune system sharp. It keeps those bacteria going, okay, so do I need to keep this one? I need to like sort of up my this for that to keep this guy in check. And then I need to do this. It keeps it sharp. It's like if you stop learning as you get old, your brain starts to go to mush, right? Like you want to keep things sharp. And coming in contact, this is going to take me down a different road, but it doesn't matter. Coming into contact with viruses, coming into contact with dirt, coming into contact with diseases, coming into contact, it only, if your body is prepared, it just enhances your ability to be sharp. And it's the same thing with your gut. So what concerns me is that when we talk about food, right, we sterilize our food. All of our food is void of bacteria. So when we want to think about bacteria, we're so focused on, you know, and I'm a probiotic company. So for me to say this, you have to know that it's a passion for me, because that's what, like, a big part of our business is probiotics and gut health. But pigeonholing it into that, or pigeonholing it into just fecal transplants, or pigeonholing it into anything, we're not under really understanding what bacteria does. Because we need it in our food, we need it in our soil, we need to do regenerative bacteria soil production with our food. We need to be looking at bacteria in a very different way. And it is vital for the foundation of our bodies, our dog's body, and our ecosystem. Like us removing all the bacteria and all the things that we assume is bad in our environment, we are destroying our world, right? So it's the same with our gut. If in our dog's gut, it's like, okay, let's look at this from a really high level and, you know, make sure that when we're purchasing probiotics, or make sure when we're looking at gut health, that we're purchasing things that have functionality instead of a word.
Yeah.
Right. Because that is really, really important. And I can speak more to that when we talk about prebiotics and stuff, because that's a big deal for me right now, is prebiotics are equally as important to me as probiotics.
Yeah. And I've noticed that when I switched all my dogs to Adored Beasts, I did so because when I began looking at the probiotics that were on the market, and you're right, it's in everything. There are lines of grooming products that have probiotics. And at first, and this probably started about 4 or 5 years ago, that I began to notice this as kind of a buzzword. At first, it was exciting because it kind of made sense to me. But now that it's really widespread, I began to wonder, and this is because of Adored Beast, is does a probiotic or prebiotic, does it need to be species appropriate? Because while I know that I can drink goat's milk and gain some benefits, I think my dog walker's here, and my dogs can drink goat's milk and gain benefits, when it comes to the supplements on the market, how do I know if I'm buying something because I think that it's going to help my dog, that it's actually really going to help my dog, because maybe they're using the same strain of a probiotic in that pet supplement that I would find in a human supplement?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. So first of all, I want to say that they're when it comes to any kind of health, okay, any kind of health, any kind of buzzword, even the word sustainable right now, it drives me crazy because people look at, oh, this product is sustainable, and they instantly, you know, bless their hearts, they think that they're going to purchase that product and it's going to help the environment. And I would probably say 95% of the time, it's not about environment, it's about sustainable for the company. like, is this business sustainable? Because there is no differentiating, you know, this is for, you know, sustainable for the environment, or this is a, so gut health is similar right now, where I believe that everybody has their good intentions, and using any probiotics is better than not using any probiotics. I do believe that when you're combining it with whole food, and when you're combining it with whatever, but when you're purchasing something that's in dog food, like dry dog food that's processed, and you're purchasing something that, you know, you're not really sure, you're putting in one or two strains of something, and then that's all you're doing, then it's clear that company hasn't been, you know, doing their research on what really gut health needs. So I can tell you firsthand that some human strain probiotics are absolutely beneficial for animals. And the reason I can tell you that is because those are the ones that I used at my hospital, and I saw amazing results. But I handpicked those strains based on the anatomy, physiology, and pathology that I was seeing in veterinary medicine, right? So I honed in on the strains that humans were taking, and that you would see in probiotics. And I never gave less than 14 strains at one time. Like, I would never go, it's like taking a flower bed and going, I want a wild flower bed, but I'm just going to plant sunflowers. Quite quickly, that flower bed is going to be predominantly sunflowers. And that's not what you want, right? You don't want to be planting one strain. You want to have a diverse amount of strains. But there are definitely strains. And then I was lecturing at PEI University, the vet college, on gut health, like 6 years ago, I think. And this very smart young veterinarian, she said to me, oh my gosh, I loved your talk. My mom has been talking to me about gut health forever, so I'm fully on board. But I have a question. Are all the probiotics that we give to our animals or to our patients the ones that we use for people, which are predominantly cattle, right? From cows. And or a lot of them are from cows. And I said, yes. And she said, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, why wouldn't we be looking more for the species specific? And I said, it's a very, very, very good question. And I've been thinking about that a lot, but it's literally because no one's done it. That's the only answer, right? Is it hasn't been done yet. Like, we've been looking at probiotics and gut health for people a lot longer than we have with animals. It's not in a place where anyone's going to take that money to research that yet. And on my way home, I'm like, oh gosh, there goes my new roof. There goes my new truck tires. There goes everything. And I was introduced to someone that was doing species-oriented probiotics, and I started working with him and to do it. And it's very interesting because the first thing that was researched with species specific is, does it maintain its viability in the acidity of a dog's gut, which is very different than a person and very different than a cow, right? A cow and a person were similar. So we can understand that. And that's why when I first started making probiotics for Adored Beast, I put 30 billion colony forming units in it, whereas a lot of companies were using 1 million. You know, 1 million and, you know, 15 million. And I was putting 30 billion of 12 strains in it, because I never felt like I 100% knew. There was no science proving that all of that was going to stay, how much was going to stay viable, right? Our digestive systems are very different. So that's the first thing that we did. And then we isolated specific strains. So we took dog feces and started producing probiotics from specific isolated strains of healthy dog feces. And it was amazing. It blew me away, because the next thing we did is what does it do to Clostridium, E. coli, and Salmonella, which is the three pathogenic bacteria that veterinary medicine is slapping everybody on the wrists for, saying that if we feed our dogs this raw food, we are going to give those pathogenic, we're going to make like a zoonotic, or a, we're going to pass those dangerous pathogens over to people, right? So when we looked at this study, lo and behold, these bacteria had the ability to suppress all of those bacteria. And it was like a light bulb went on for me. And I thought, well, of course it does. Of course it did. Because if a dog didn't have that ability, they wouldn't have evolved. They would all be dead if they were susceptible to those pathogenic bacteria. They must have a bacteria in their gut that makes them be protected against pathogenic bacteria, because they scavenge, they eat things that are dead all the time in the wild. So that started my whole focus on species specific probiotics.
I think Phyto's Flora was the first one that I've tried with my dog, because I was looking to get to the bottom of a health issue with Rodrigo. And so that's where someone recommended it on social media, and that's where I started. And now I do the whole line. But I wanted to ask, you know, so I feed a fresh food diet and I'm so involved in this. I follow you. We're all talking about you. This is all, you know, great information that I love to consume, but it's also not a surprise. And for people who are just getting started, just thinking about improving their dog's diet, you know, how is feeding a probiotic or prebiotic? And actually, before I even ask that question, we should probably go back to what is a prebiotic and what is a probiotic, and also what are digestive enzymes?
Probiotics are friendly or supportive bacteria that produce positive effects in the gut. So they help with digestion, they help produce and metabolize postbiotics, which are your short chain fatty acids, or, you know, they're the bacteria that are friendly to create a strong and a strong ecosystem in the gut, right? So that helps with your immune system, helps fight infection, helps your dogs, you know, ward off viruses, the whole nine yards. Prebiotics are the food for probiotics. So without prebiotics, the bacteria has a harder time colonizing and surviving in the gut. So they need to have food. And what some people don't understand about that is that when an animal or a person is born, you're born with something called your native bacteria. And that changes dramatically throughout the lifetime of a being. And it can be interfered with all kinds of things, like, you know, poor quality food, stress, drugs, the list goes on and on, that how it can change and decrease its amount of diverse bacteria in the gut, or destroy all of it. Like if you go on an antibiotic, chances are many, 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 many friendly and vitally important bacteria gets killed along with the bacteria that they're focusing on. So when you're born with these native bacteria, and these native bacteria live in the gut lining. And then if we feed probiotics, or they're getting bacteria from soil, or they're drinking kefir, or whatever it is, they're getting bacteria that is called transient. So that you're not born with it. And they're vitally important too. I use it as an example, New York City, people that have lived in New York City their whole life. And then people from the suburbs come in and they work in the city and then they leave and go back home. They're vital for the city, but they also have to eat. So if you don't have enough food and the worker bees or the transient bacteria eat all the food, then the native bacteria that live in the gut will start to eat the gut lining and actually cause leaky gut syndrome. So prebiotics have been a big thing for me to make sure that every animal that I treat and work with get enough prebiotics. Saying that, when it comes to people and animals, we are different. And historically, we only use sugar as a prebiotic because bacteria does very well on sugar-based sugar-based products. So we use things like FOS and maltodextrin, and we use these prebiotics to help, and it does, it feeds them and helps them colonize and grow. But it never sat well with me at my practice. Not even 28 years ago, it didn't sit well with me because I thought to myself, you know, we're so focused on like for me, I've always been a functional practitioner. So anything I put into my body, my animal's body, my family's body needs to have a purpose. It needs to either be functional from a perspective of medicinal or functional from a perspective of nutrient dense. And there was nothing prebiotic wise that fit into that realm. So I started researching it and I thought, well, how would dogs and cats get prebiotics in the wild? Like, how would they be getting them? I'm not going to be eating maltodextrin or FOS in the wild. So I did a lot of research on it and thought, okay, well, they get it from the gut of their prey, right? They're getting the fermented vegetables in the guts of the prey that they're eating. Plus they're scavenging on berries and weeds and different things in the forest or fields or whatever. And then I thought, okay, well, what do all those animals have in common that they all eat? And one thing was bark. So I started using something called larch as a prebiotic, which is the bark of trees. So that's where I started. But now what I've done research in the last 5 years on something called functional prebiotics, because I'm still determined that anything that I use for my products that I sell or what I formulate need to have a purpose. Like, you're not just giving it to them because it's, you know, it's a great filler or it's easy to mix the other medicinal ingredients in. It's got to have a purpose. So I started researching turkey tail and I started researching chlorella. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what it does. Right. There you go. So that's turkey tail medicinal tincture.
Yeah.
But now in our wolf strain that we have turkey tail as a prebiotic. So we've done lots of research on that. And now we know that we can use the way we've done this is that we can use these functional foods to also be prebiotics. But I want to just go one step more. Sorry, it can be quite complicated, but it doesn't need to be. So we've the average person has heard about probiotics. Not everybody knows about prebiotics, but now everybody's going to start hearing about postbiotics. Okay, so postbiotics is the next big thing. So what postbiotics are is the synergistic effect of a prebiotic and a probiotic together. So when the two of them combined, what metabolic function happens with those two chemistries put together? And we're doing a lot of research right now, and there's not a lot of companies that can actually say to you, we know the postbiotic effects of our probiotics, mm-hmm. because it just isn't, not very many companies do their own research and development. And that's not bad, and it's not good, and that's not anything. The only reason I know this is because we do our own research and development, because I'm so anal about everything that I do. So it's an important piece to understand that it's the postbiotics that's doing the magic. Mm-hmm. It's the combination of those two things that create the magic.
Right.
And continue to maintain and colonize so that they don't just lose it. Do you know what I mean? Did that answer your question about prebiotics?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, another question that I have is, you know, so for people who are feeding, whether it be dry dog food or air dried or dehydrated, but some form of, you know, because there's, you know, The Honest Kitchen has the clusters and, you know, Stella and Chewy's has raw coated kibble. And there are these brands that are coming out with a product that wouldn't land in the fresh food segment, but it's still, you know, everyone's doing the best they can.
For sure.
Will adding, you know, we always talk about, oh, well, if you can't feed raw, add fresh food to the bowl. But I don't see people talking about, well, add some pre and probiotics to your dog's diet. And will those products benefit people who aren't able to switch either fully to a fresh food diet or even partially?
100%. It does. It does. I don't really buy it in the food, in the commercially based food, because I just, like I said, I have such a love of bacteria that I can't wrap my head around, you know, using that kind of heat with them and doing like manipulating them so much that they stay viable, because then we've kind of, again, lost that magic of bacteria, right? We're just, instead of going, this is a great food and here's a great probiotic, we're trying to do everything at the same time. And that's not really how it works in gut health. But enzymes are really important. Like you asked me about enzymes. Yes. So we have a product that has enzymes and pre and probiotics in it. And the reason that I did that was specifically because I don't care what you're doing. I want to try and help your dog. Right. So I came from this place where it's like, okay, if you're going to feed dry food or you're going to feed a commercially based food, and to be really honest with you, we still haven't fully embraced a whole prey diet, even with raw food. So we're missing vital digestive enzymes in our dog's food, because those enzymes would have been eaten through a whole prey diet, right? In the gut, in the glands, in all kinds of, you know, the pancreas and the list goes on and on when they would consume the whole animal. So digestive enzymes are really helpful, really, really helpful in commercially based diets, because it helps the body to break down the food, because when it's dry, it needs to be wet, right? So I always say to people, take the digestive enzymes, put a little bone broth even on your dry food, sprinkle the digestive enzyme and the pre and probiotic on it, and then let it sit for like 10 minutes, 5 minutes even, and then feed your dog. And what it does is it gives them that it mimics that, that digestive process of what they would be eating. That's raw, right? But digestive enzymes don't hurt raw fed animals either, because like I said, we still haven't been able, and legally can't in some provinces and in some states, can't put brains and guts and organs and eyeballs and all the like intestinal, you know, what's in the intestines and what's in the stomach. We can't put it into food. Mm-hmm. So digestive enzymes are very helpful. And my personal choice of digestive enzymes is a combination of fruit and animal, so that they get that, again, like if they're going to eat a whole prey and they're going to eat some pancreas and whatever, they're also eating the fermented already digestive foods and the actual digestive juices. Mm-hmm. They're prey's digestive enzymes. They're eating that. Mm-hmm. So by using animal and fruit based, you're kind of getting that combination.
Yeah. And I just went and reached for that. That's the healthy gut. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because it's like, I do, when I talk about these things on social media, people are surprised that I buy basically the entire line. I'm actually working on, and I've written articles explaining how I use each one, because every single one has a different function. So the healthy gut is the one with the digestive enzyme and the pre and probiotic. And so I have a dog with EPI, and he is on digestive enzymes, but this is just extra support for his gut, and adding it has made a huge difference. And I have had issues with sometimes dogs, coprophagia, when they're eating their own stool. To me, that's a sign that they need the digestive enzymes, because usually my dogs go for Rodrigo's stool because it's chock full of enzymes because of his EPI. And I can stop that in the tracks just by adding this to their diet for a week to get it going up again.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about some of your products for a minute. So I am in World War III and IV combined with environmental allergies. It is my world. I'm going to be doing a documentary soon, probably on CNN. No. But so I've just moved into a very, very high allergy area. So much so that I transported two dogs that have never had allergies. So I'm in the fight for my life. So I'm looking at your Yeasty Beast protocol. Mm-hmm. For allergies, and, you know, like-minded people hang out together. So I am constantly on social media and doing emails back and forth about how can we. And this season, it has been unbearable for my 8-year-old. I have golden doodles. They have the long floppy ears. Haven't even been able to go to the beach recently because, you know, yeast has just brought all of its stuff and moved in. So I'm looking at this protocol and I'm very interested, Julie, but I wanted you to kind of walk me through this bundle in the case that, you know, I probably will get it and I want to try it and I want to promote it, but I'm looking at, whoa, lots of stuff here, that I need to keep up with. And is it better to buy the bundle from you as opposed to, you know, the individual,
You mean the protocol? Like, is it better to buy a kit?
Yeah, I'm looking at this 3-product kit.
Yeah.
That you have, because I really have two issues. I've got yeast and an 8-year-old, and then I wanted to try your joint supplement for a 14-year-old who is doing well, just aging. Appetite is great. Digestive issues, not really have any. Just that aging process, losing muscle mass. You know, I've got every colored booty you can imagine, and we just put them on and we go. So, but I know that I can see it's a little stressful up and down stairs and, you know, getting up from a seated position. So yes, let's talk the Yeasty Beast, because I really want to find something that can get in front of the yeast as opposed fighting it after I smell it and see it.
Right. So there is, again, the line of products have sort of a systematic approach. You don't have to follow the system. What that means is that when you, I'm trying to teach people through my product line to rotate, right, with probiotics. And when we do that, we develop the strongest, diverse, most diverse ecosystem. So when it comes to yeast, we have to be really careful, because what'll happen is that people will dump probiotics into their dogs, because lots of people have said probiotics help to destroy yeast, and they're 100% right. They do. But when your dog has an abundance of yeast, like a high amount of yeast, they will get something called a Herx reaction or a die-off if you do too many probiotics at once. So if you ramp up that gut health too quickly, what will happen is you will be doing what you think that you want to do. The problem is that yeast has about 14 to 17 toxins when they're alive. One of them being I want to say, I was going to say aspartame. One of them being, in nail polish remover. What is nail polish remover? Acetone. And which is one of the toxins that they emanate. So think about how toxic and irritating that is, right? So you can imagine when that yeast is producing that toxin, the itchiness and the burning and all that, that's just from one. But when you kill them, when they're dying, if you think of them almost like having a skeletal system, we create this like cemetery of yeast in your dog. And when that happens, they can produce up to 30 times more toxins. So then the die-off looks like the yeast is getting worse because it smells the same, looks the same, acts the same. And then you're like overwhelmed and you're like, oh my gosh, now what am I going to do? So you take them back to the vets and then they go back on all of the anti-yeast and the ketoconazole and the baths and the this and the that. And really you're treating something that isn't there. Like it's not that they're getting more yeast, they're having a yeast die off. So then you wind up in this vicious circle because then it's destroying the gut lining. And then you're getting, you know, reactive proteins and all that kind of stuff that happened with leaky gut. So working with allergies is something that you want to, I'm going to literally say, chase it. Chase the allergies, outsmart it, out everything, because that's what's happened is your dog's body has, for whatever reason, gone into a state of overreactivity, not underreactivity. It's an autoimmune state, which is meaning that its immune system is too strong. So that's why veterinarians and doctors put people and animals on prednisone and prednisolone and atopica and all these immune suppressive drugs. But that comes with a massive consequence, which is, well, we know it's hard on their kidneys, it's hard on their gut, but all it's doing is suppressing it. It's not getting rid of it. And then we get a rebound effect. So we're taking these drugs, whether they're ketoconazole with yeast, it doesn't matter. We're taking this drug and we're pushing down, we're not getting rid of anything. We're pushing it away. We're putting a big, huge piece of duct tape on it. When that duct tape comes off, it doesn't just go, oh, okay, I'm just going to come back up again. It gets a rebound effect, right? And then your dog is way worse when it comes off of it. It may not be way, way worse for a long period of time. It might bring itself back to homeostasis, but what we're seeing looks so bad, no one can stand it, understandably so, and they put them back on the drugs. And then we get on this merry-go-round of never being able to do anything. And then the drug pathology causing more harm and blah, blah, blah. So when it comes to allergies, what we have to remember is it doesn't all fit into one box. And allergies and gut health are exponentially interconnected. So if you know for sure that your animal has yeast, then yeast yeast has no probiotics in it, has no prebiotics in it, has no probiotics in it, has one type of bacteria in it that tends to attract the yeast and pull it out of the system. But it is not a pre and probiotic. It is a way of being able to reduce the yeast and kill the yeast in a very slow, methodical way. So there's a particular end. That's why you don't give it with food. There's a particular digestive enzyme in it that tends to be able to, once the yeast is dying through things like Podarco and all of the herbs that are yeast busters, because they break the yeast. Let's just non-scientifically, they break the shell of the yeast, right? They're able to bust through that and destroy them. And then the enzymes consume them. So if you, that's a very layman's kind of explanation of what that protocol does. But yeast plays havoc on the gut. They're like it's almost, I keep going back to crabs, right? Crabs and shells and things dying in skeletal systems, because that's how my brain works when I try to explain things. So when those things are in the gut, they destroy the gut lining, they play havoc, they attach themselves to the gut lining, and they cause leaky gut. So once you've dealt with the yeast, you've got to deal with leaky gut. You've got to deal with the gut trauma. And you don't have to use the word leaky gut if people don't like the word yeast. It doesn't really matter. It's gut trauma. It's trauma to the interstitial lining and the junctions of the gut, which is vitally important, that because it is our main source of detoxification. And if those are leaking open, one, they have poor nutrient value in their food because their body literally leaks the protein into the bloodstream. The next thing is that it becomes, it doesn't maintain or discard through stool toxins. And then the toxins leak into the bloodstream. So we've put together something for animals that are really, really bad. And if that's what I'm hearing from you, something called our rescue protocol or something like that, our relief protocol. And what that is it's a combination of the leaky gut protocol, the yeast protocol, and Phytosflora. And it's because it's just years and years of hearing thousands of people and working with customer service through people trying to hold people's hands through this very, very heart-wrenching disease called allergies. Because it is, like, to watch our animals suffer constantly itching. It's the reason that we came out with leaky gut protocol, the very first thing that we ever developed in our product line, because I was blown away by this conference that I went to, that in the US, the number one reason for elected euthanasia are allergies. So the number one reason for dogs dying is cancer, but the number one reason for elected euthanasia is actually allergies. So when I heard that, I was like, okay, I had such great success with working with allergies at my vet hospital that I'm like, I've got to be able to get this out into the public's hands to help these animals. So with the Yeasty Beast, you can start it and you can see how it's going. And then if we're in a position where they're doing well for 2 weeks, then you can stop it, start the leaky gut protocol. You're not wasting your money because you're going to rotate through them, right? So it's not going to cost any more, because eventually you're going to have to do the leaky gut protocol anyways, because it's going to trap, the yeast is going to trash your dog's gut. So the Phytosflora has the species-oriented probiotic in it, but it also has fulvic and humic acid, which is a detoxifier. Okay. So what it does is it helps to chelate and pull heavy metals and toxicity and chemicals out of the body. So I always say to people, start, if you know your dog has yeast, start with the Yeasty Beast. See what happens. Do a whole protocol. If everything's great, then move into the leaky gut protocol to heal the gut. If on it, they start getting better, but then they either don't get better, so they sort of stall, or they start to get worse, then rotate them through those three products. And that's, we've had massive success doing the relief protocol with really, really bad dogs. Saying that, what is one of the number one most important things for dogs with allergies is to be using probiotics that we know through science for 1,000,000% sure that they have immune modulating qualities. So our Phytosflora, that's why I use the Phytosflora, because our Phytosflora canine species oriented probiotics, we have shown through science that they have immune modulation. Our wolf strain is the same way. So was our cat one and our horse one. But what immune modulation is exactly what I was talking to you about, high to high of immune system. So this is the splendid thing about a body. Nature and our bodies and our dogs' bodies know how to bring us back to homeostasis. We know with the right tools. We know what happened. We know how to do that. We intuitively know how to make that happen. So when you have an immune system that goes too high, we do drugs and we do all that other stuff and we bring it down. But when we bring it down too low, then our immune system is too low and we get secondary viruses and bacteria. That's why prednisone and antibiotics go hand in hand, because often you give prednisone, the dogs are itching, they get secondary staphylococcus on their skin, but their immune system is so suppressed that they can't fight it off. So then they have to go on antibiotics, and then you're destroying the gut microbiome even more. So what is a really big focus at my practice and in my line is to produce things that have something called a natural immune modulation, which means that it helps the body bring itself into balance. So if the immune system goes up, it goes, oh, okay, the immune system's going up, we need to bring it back down. And then it goes, oh, it's going too low, we got to bring it back up. So it has a natural ability to elicit immune modulation in a dog or a person or whatever, it doesn't matter. So larch can do that, our prebiotic. Our Phytosflora does that. Our canine species specific probiotic does that. Our wolf strain does that. So we've proven by science that those things create immune modulation. So does turkey tail. So does chaga. So I always tell people that have animals that have allergies that they've got to focus on immune modulation so that we want to be ramping up their immune system.
Looking at your canine allergy bundle. So I think what I probably should do is start with the yeasty gut first.
Yep.
That bundle and try to get chase and probably knock down the yeast that I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And then when I can get that under control, then move over to the canine allergy bundle.
Then I would do the leaky gut.
I forgot leaky gut.
Yeah. And then don't forget though, is that you may not be able to control it just with the yeasty beast, right? It depends on how bad they have it. And it depends on what else is going on in their bodies. Like I said, if they're getting the yeast because their immune system is too high, because they have allergies, then what happens is that you can get rid of the yeast, but you're combating the yeast, but you're still not then dealing with the underlying core issue, which is probably a destroyed gut lining so and when your gut lining becomes destroyed, the body immediately goes into too high of an autoimmune response, because it doesn't understand why all of these things that should be living in the gut are being dealt with from a toxicity point of view or a digestive point of view in the gut is all of a sudden now being leaked into the bloodstream. So it's going, holy crapola, what is going on? So it goes into this heightened state of alert, right? And then it goes, oh, I'm going to attack that chicken protein because it's in my gut, it's in my bloodstream, and it's not supposed to. And then I'm going to save it as an antigen that I have to attack every time I get near chicken. Mm-hmm. When you have environmental allergies, what happens is the same thing, only it's pollen, only it's grasses, only it's this, only it's that. Well, it's got to get there somewhere. And most of the time, often, it's getting there because the dog's inhaling it or eating it or licking it off its paws. It's going into the gut. And because it doesn't have a healthy gut, it's being leaked into the bloodstream and it's becoming reactive.
Go ahead and preach, Reverend Julie. Go ahead and preach.
It's complicated, but it doesn't need to be complicated. And I just want to say this one thing. the whole line, don't be afraid. Don't ever, ever be afraid. I formulate every single one of those products based on it being able to get into the hands of the average dog owner and of in the hands of there could be a mistake. Someone might be too much. Someone might not understand. Someone might be treating something, not treating something, wanting to give something that doesn't exist. Nothing in that line is going to be contraindicated in doing.
You know, you just gave a great segue to my last question that I have right now. Although now I feel guilty because I keep thinking about my strawberry cheesecake that I ate yesterday that did not have any functional personality to it.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, yeah, I was eating them.
I was like, damn.
Those almond M&Ms, what was the function of that? Enjoyment? They were for my mental health.
You know, I felt like I was trying to justify it. I was like, there's strawberries in there.
I was waiting for her to say, and then there's the occasional bowl of Rocky Road ice cream that's just for mental.
Oh, you know, I get it. But you know what?
Like,
you just really hit on something that I think is so important. Kimberly and I, one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast, other than just to continue to talk like we do, is that so many people don't have, based on the blogging and the social media platform, don't have the ability to hear this information. And what's so scary is how does the average pet parent, just a pet parent who loves their dog, when they get wind of, you know, that there are pre and probiotics and bundles where, you know, you can help your dog with whatever fill in the blank issues the dog is having. But when you pull that up on the internet, oh golly, Miss Molly, there's just dozens. What is it that the average pet parent should look for to know that this really is not based on science and research and actually having somebody spend decades formulating this for the dog, for the cat? I mean, what are the, I don't know, those trigger signs that one would see that to know this is not the right product. It is not natural. It is not going to give you the results that you want.
Well, I think a lot, and I mean, this is a terrible thing to say, but cost, right? Cost, supersizing things, like, you know, how small our jars are, right? But they give the same amount as a big jar does because there's no fillers in it. But when people see that tiny, tiny little jar, and then they see another jar that looks like four times the size, 10 times the size, then what can happen with that is that people assume that, oh, well, I'm getting more bang for my buck with this. And that's not true. It's marketing, right? It's marketing, and it's a lot harder to formulate something without fillers from a chemistry point of view, because you can put a very small amount of something with like silicone dioxide or maltodextrin or whatever. And it's so, so much easier to formulate as far as how much to give that animal. But I think the big thing is how long has the company been in business? Who is formulating it? Who's on staff? How long have they been researching it? Because, you know, I'm very much about collaboration, and I feel truthfully that we all have to stick together, it doesn't matter if you're someone like me that dedicates my entire life to it, or it's someone that just thinks it's a good idea. We have to try and stay together and not slag people or each other. But I think an important piece is what is your knowledge of your product before it goes to market? Have you, you know, the products that I have out there, I clinically used in practice from 8 to 20 years. I know exactly what it does. I know exactly what it does to every single possible thing you could possibly imagine. And so we stand behind it 100%, like 100%. We have incredibly knowledgeable customer service. So that's the other thing. Are you, when you're typing something in and asking a question, is that, are you really typing it to a real person? Or are you typing it into something that is just like randomly comes off of an internet thing that really nobody even really knows? Like if someone doesn't know, and my customer service team, which is just amazing, if they don't know the answer to help guide you and hold your hand, or you can't find and frequently ask questions or whatever, they'll come to me. They'll say to me, there's this person is asking me something and I don't understand. I don't know what to tell them. And I will personally get it and be able to help that person, hopefully help that person. And then we'll go, okay, cool. So the next time we see that, we have a macro for that, because we've actually had a personal heart-to-heart experience with someone that's having a hard time with their dog, right? That we've helped them through. So to answer your question, how real is that company? Can you get a hold of someone? Can you talk to the formulator, or can you talk to the person that's close to the formulator? Can you see the certificate of analysis? We have someone that's in California. I just adore her. Her name is Lee. And all she does is dig into her certificate of analysis, because they can be manipulated. They can look really weird. They look wonderful on paper, but then you talk to the company and it's like they waste water left, right, and center. They're cutting down, you know, forests or whatever. Is the company a human company? Is it a human company, or is it a massive company that is popping out supplements left, right, and center because it's a very, very, very lucrative, large industry right now that plays on people's heartstrings when it comes to animals? So how much credibility does a formulator have, or are they just purchasing it from, you know, a random company that white labels a whole bunch of stuff and sticks it in a bottle, and then you can't even talk to somebody that could answer your questions?
Exactly.
Right. So I think if people saying that, something is better than nothing. Okay. Saying that, meaning I'm not discrediting anybody out there in any way, shape, or form. If there's a company out there that's going to do any amount of good for a dog or a cat or a horse or a pig, or I don't even care, an animal, awesome. Right? There's enough space in this big world for hundreds and thousands of companies. But when someone is dealing with an animal that is already suffering, or someone has lost a dog to cancer, or someone has euthanized an animal because its skin disease was so bad that they couldn't handle to see it suffer anymore, or it died of liver failure because of the drugs that it had to be on, whatever. When you're dealing with something like that, you want to make sure, or you're trying to prevent something like that, you want to make sure that the products that you're using is coming from a company that has the knowledge, the integrity, and that you can get help from. You can really get help from them.
Okay. And
that's what I would say. And I do something called Ask Me Anythings once a month. And I'm always blown away by the amount of people that come on there. And I still go as the formulator of this very large company now, and I answer people's questions. And I can't get through everybody because sometimes there's 500 people on there. But most of the time, there's similar questions that everybody has.
Well, I will get started with Yeasty Beast. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will. I shall join the adored beast family.
Cool. Yay. Welcome aboard.
I have a final question, and it's something that, you know, it's been on my mind for a long time. But, you know, I have an article on my website that's sort of like, you know, natural sources of probiotic or prebiotics. So basically foods that you can add to your dog's diet, you know, like asparagus and, you know, things like that, that are rich in prebiotics. But, you know, lately I've also been wondering, when it comes to whole foods, like, are you really making a dent in your dog's gut health when you're feeding, you know, like pureed vegetables or what, however you choose to feed the vegetables or fruit. We have apple trees on our property, so we let our dogs pick their own apples. So is how much of an impact is that making, if any?
A lot. A lot. So long as it's not sterilized food.
Yeah.
Right. So long. I mean, prebiotics, it's the cellulose and them breaking down the matter. Right. But it makes a big difference. It makes a really big difference, but you have to match that difference with the amount of probiotics that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing a lot of kefir and you're doing a lot of, you know, if you're really trying to like up that bacteria, you've got to up that food. Okay. So, you know, it depends. For me, I don't worry about doing, I always think that the more diverse, like I said, the better. So I really, really support people feeding all different kinds of fibrous foods to their animals, so long as they know that they can handle it and then start off small and build them up. And, you know, if they're fermented, they still have the fibrous prebiotic part of it. So you're giving bacteria and you're giving prebiotics. To me, the more diverse, the better, right? So you're not going to get the same kind of bacterial strains in kefir as you will in a probiotic. I like just doing lots of stuff, lots of different things. But I do think it's, and you know, just make sure that there's no, you know, glyphosates on all these things and stuff like that, so that you're not adding all this fiber along with a lot of chemicals and toxins and stuff. So local farmers, lots of dirt, you know, don't wash your vegetables if they haven't been sprayed, like leave them as they are.
Okay. All right. And to wrap up, you have a new line, the Roots line. And I've actually, it's funny because I've been seeing a lot about soil lately. Now everyone's, it's a big conversation, but yours is unique to others in that it's soil and sea. And I was wondering if you can talk about why you chose to go that route.
Sure. So, and I wanted to talk to you, especially about your EPI dog, because okay. Since we came out with that, so 5 years ago, I lectured with the Dogs Naturally Summit in Chicago.
I remember.
And I talked about SIBO 5 years ago, and a lot of people didn't understand it, and it was a new thing and whatever. But the for any dogs that do have any kind of pancreatic issues, a lot of the underlying cause is SIBO. So when you put them on a soil-based probiotic, it's very different. But I mean, let me go into the Roots line, and then I'll hone in on that really fast. So I have a medicinal mushroom line as well. And with our microbiome line, which is our forest project, right? Which are our medicinal mushrooms that come from the perspective that medicinal mushrooms that grow in an environment of bacteria, like the forest floor or in logs or in that diverse ecosystem, have more plant wisdom and produce different qualities of medicinal values. And I couldn't find that any mushrooms that fit in that. So we bought a forest and we are growing our own. And within that microbiome, I got more and more interested in the wild aspect of the gut, like really wild. So I started looking at using species of ancestral species. So what our human guts and ant dog guts look like 200 years ago is very different than what they look like now. And we know that has been because of our lack of diversity in our diets. Like we just literally, even if we do fecal transplants, even if we do I followed this incredible researcher for a very long time that did a research on the oldest people in the world, right? The oldest colony of people in the world. And this group of people he spent, I think, 3 months with or 6 months with, and he honed it all the way down. This was like, I think this was like 15 years ago. He did this, he was from Chicago, and they don't have the diseases that modern day people have. And in 1 week, right? In 1 week, they would eat the diversity of plant and animal species, 300 different things, 300. And they used the roots and the dirt and they made everything together. So he wound up having a fecal transplant and went back to Chicago, but it kept doing his stool tests, but it only lasted for 3 months. It didn't colonate and stay in his gut because he couldn't eat the diversity in which supplied that bacteria and prebiotics, right? So I started thinking, like, I want to look at that. I want to look at that. Like, I think fecal transplants are amazing, don't get me wrong, but I also feel like not everybody in the world and not every in the dog in the world should be getting fecal transplants for many reasons. One is that they clearly have the DNA, right? Yeah. So, you know, we've done mice studies to show that mice that are terrible, but they electrified the mice, right? So they had these two colonies of mice that were very calm and collected and nice mice and whatever. And I think they electrified these mice to make them aggressive and scared and freaked out. And they did a transplant on the calm mice and they started becoming like the stressed out mice.
Yeah.
So stool has fingerprints. Like it has a fingerprint. So I started thinking that I wanted to start introducing ancestral fingerprints back into animals, meaning probiotics that came from stools from virgin guts. Mm-hmm. Right? And guts that had the mental capacity that they once had, the resilience. And so I did a wolf strain, right? And the wolf strain, you know, came from wild wolves. And when you look at wild wolves, and I'm trying to really hurry because I know we're running out of time, but these wolves, some of these wolves can weigh up to 160 pounds. Oof. And they're having babies when they're 10.
Wow.
And they're living until they're 16 and 17 years of age in the wild, in hardcore climate, in, you know, having a lot of stress because their ecosystem is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because of urbanization, right? Mm-hmm. But they are still vital and they're resilient and they are community based and they are phenomenal animals, like phenomenal. So I wanted to start looking at creating probiotics that maintain that fingerprint that would give bacteria that we couldn't get from a dog, whether we did a fecal transplant or not. They're the types of bacteria that wouldn't exist anymore in our even raw fed, healthy urbanized dogs. The evolution changes, right? And you know, unless you have a dog that's been urbanized and has not been vaccinated, had no drugs, and has been on raw food for decades so that they passed it through their generational times, it was hard to find that. So I did that, and I did it with a prebiotic turkey tail, because it would have been something that the animals, the prey animals in which those wolves would have been eating, would have been consuming.
Yeah.
Like in my forest, that's bringing it right back to the forest and the mushrooms. Rabbits, squirrels, deers, that's one of our problems, eat our mushrooms, right? So it's like, okay, well, we know they eat them. So I was like, okay, so let's look at this as a prebiotic, right? The same way as I did with the bark. So that was the whole thing, is I'm trying to go back in time and look at what was happening that we didn't have this chronic disease.
Yeah.
What's the link, right? Well, we know it's food. We know it's chemicals. We know it's stress. We know it's all that. So if we are to take the bacteria from ancient things and replant them, chances are we're going to get the fingerprint and the particular species of bacteria that we wouldn't be able to get.
Right.
So that moves me now over to soil and sea.
Mm-hmm.
So the soil is really, a soil probiotic is vital for any animals that have SIBO. And it's just nice because it's organic ancient soil that we get our bacteria from. People asked us, do we manipulate our bacteria? Do we get, are they sort of like genetically modified? And the answer is no, never. They come from their species of origin, which is very old soil, very old ancient organic soil. So when you use those bacteria are very different than the bacteria that live in the lower gut. And when you have SIBO, what happens is, whether it's, I just did a big article on SIBO if you want to go look at it,
sure,
and the relationships with EPI and enzymes and stuff. So what happens, whether it's mechanical, there's a million different reasons why the bacteria in the gut, the lower gut, seeps up and starts to procreate in the small intestine. It's not supposed to be there. Those particular bacteria are not friendly in the small intestine. So they produce some pretty harmful gases and pathogenic bacteria. So when you're feeding probiotics, it's really, really important to be feeding ones that are healthy for the small intestine that will still go to the large intestine. But you can't guarantee that when you have like a faulty valve, let's say. So what can happen is that bacteria from the small gut, you're feeding a probiotic or whatever, it could be going into the gut. But then if it seeps back up, it's coming back into a place where it's not supposed to be. So until you deal with SIBO and you treat it, and you know it's very treatable, you want to be trying to look at probiotics that don't have the lactose, the animal lactose, bacillus and bifidus and things like that in it. So soil-based probiotics are really important. And when I looked at a prebiotic that would have naturally been historically, like thousands of years ago, combined in synergy, it would have been plant material from the ocean,
mm-hmm,
which is like chlorella and things like that. So chlorella in the soil base is used as a prebiotic, mm-hmm, but it also has that functional, chlorella has a billion different medicinal benefits, and they're bacteria. They're a type of plant-based single cell organisms that are very similar to bacteria. So that's why I've got soil and sea together, because mm-hmm, they have a combination that I am very happy to, I take it every day and plant different types of bacteria, single cell organisms and things like that, that we would be getting from our soil rich, dense bacteria vegetables 200 years ago. And then also what we would have been getting from our sea when our seas were healthy, mm-hmm, right? And what would have been actually part of the soil composition a long time ago, right? So yeah, I'm getting super nerdy about really looking and digging into why human health and animal health is so on the decline, right? Like you know, getting people getting sick really young with autoimmune diseases and animals alike, right? So I take the wolf probiotic. I take the, because I truly believe that we cross species contamination. I know my dog kisses me all the time. I'm kissing my dog all the time. I know my dog eats horse poo like it's going out of style. So I know I'm getting horse poo at some point. And I feel like that is the way that we produce the most healthy ecosystem and diversity for long-term health and gut health.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I actually have notes that I've been taking throughout this, because it's just like, this is so much great information.
Well, thank you. And thanks for supporting us, because I couldn't do this information, and I couldn't do this research, and I couldn't dig in like how I dig in and continue to evolve without the support of people like you guys. You know, your support just helps me continue to move on and look at different things and not think I'm crazy.
Not crazy
all the time.
I too have my notes, Julie. I've also logged on to your blog, and already got my little welcome to the Adored Beast family. And I'm going to start the Easty Beast protocol and keep everybody informed.
Yeah. And you have any questions at all, just reach out to our customer service. They'll be right there with you.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you guys. Thanks so much, Julie. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy International Women's Day.
Yeah. You too.
Bye.
Bye. See you later. Thanks so much.
That is just us, but we're still recording. And so I just wanted to, you know, have us wrap it up. But wow, that was a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was like really a lot. I probably call you when I get this packet and say, now, what the hell am I supposed to do?
I have been using her products off and on for years, but basically consistently for at least 6 months now, and have seen the changes in all of my dogs and the benefits in all of my dogs. But good. I think this is probably our heaviest episode information.
This is a very, very heavy episode. Stop potty and get some more tea. So one of the things though, if the Adored, I'm putting a whole lot of faith in this Yeasty Beast protocol so that I can take care of, like she said, chase it, get in front of it, and then be able to stretch out the cytopoint injection that he gets, mm-hmm. and go back. But our pollen is absolutely horrendous. But let me tell you something that I did not know, Kimberly, and this was such a game changer. And I don't, if I'm the only idiot out there, so be it. But I think that I have some people out there with me, and you all don't even have to write in and say you're part of my club. When I started going to Dr. Craig's practice, mm-hmm. one of the things that her husband said to me, we were talking and he said, only give Harley half an Apoquil. And I said, a half? He said, yeah. He said, give him a half based on his age. Just give him a half and that'll help him. That'll be more than enough. And then I said, okay. And he said, make sure it is given at night. And I said, hold on. I don't know what you're talking about. He said, the manufacturers insist that this is given in the evening. And I said, well, why? He said, I did not make this drug. I can only tell you what I'm told, because that's kind of how he talks. And I love him, you know, and the way he acts. Kimberly, Harley's been taking Apoquil, a half a tablet of Apoquil in the evenings after dinner before their fruit dessert. And for 6 weeks, I have not had to stop Harley from licking any body parts at all. Remember I used to tell you he smelled like a sheep or a mm-hmm. goat? I couldn't wait for his grooming.
Yep.
There's no, I mean, it has been a game changer. Wow. We have medication that tells us to eat it with food, mm-hmm. to have it in the morning, to wait until we jump up and down 12 times, whatever the case may be. But I never thought that to the extent of when is it supposed to be best for their bodies? Because I know nobody wants their dogs to be on medication. However, there's going to be a time when you have to do it.
Yeah.
And so please go so far as to say, when is the best time of day for them to take this medication? It has been like you would not believe. Half of the amount has given me twice the coverage.
Wow.
It's weird. So yeah. Rather than beat myself up, I figured I would just share.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing. That's a really good
information. Knowledge is power. Knowing is growing. All right. This has been great. You and I'll talk offline.
Yes, we will. Okay.
But
all right. Well, I actually owe everyone two podcasts, so I'll get them both out this week and then we'll be back on track again. But it's been fun. Good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.